low moral fiber.
I don't think you should drink that.
First of all, welcome to the room.
Hello.
We can stop now, Ben.
You look bad for you.
Considering I was wrong and stupid.
On sets, it makes me feel great.
And wow.
That's pretty good.
Like I could.
Can I keep this head for a souvenir?
Take all the world.
Awesome. I fully endorse day drinking.
All right. I like it.
Hey there, grog lovers, and welcome to another scurvy-ridden episode of Men of Low Moral Fiber, the show that, unlike the real Men of Low Moral Fiber, always does hundreds of hours of research and gameplay to bring you all the information you've ever wanted to know about your favorite old LucasArts games, or my name's not Mancombe Seepgood. Anyway, I'm your host, Ben Helms, and alongside me today, as always, is my swashbuckling pirate-in-training brother and co-host, Jason Helms. How you doing, man?
Man, I played Monkey Island. How do you think I'm doing? I'm doing great.
So good. So good, right?
Absolutely. That was a blast from the past. It'd been a long, long time since I had played it, and it was so good to get back into it.
Yeah, I played through it a little early this time and actually ended up playing it about halfway through again just because I couldn't wait to record. And I was just excited, and the game just holds up. So that's right. On today's episode, we are getting back to our roots here at MOLMF and digging up an old favorite and actually the namesake of our show, the reason we're called Men of Low Moral Fiber, and that's 1990's The Secret of Monkey Island, the first in the series, which is just one of the best games ever, right?
One of the best games ever. Absolutely one of my all-time favorites. Spoiler alert, it's not Westy 12 yet, but we're getting close. Oh, we get real close.
It is real close. Westy 11 and a half, maybe.
We get Trappist. Don't worry. We do get Trappist, at least.
For sure. So quick rundown. We're going to talk about some of the history of Monkey Island, how it got made, who was involved. Then we'll be joined by a special guest, Corrigan Vaughn, to talk about some of the gameplay. She played the game with us over the past couple weeks. So we get in kind of the nitty gritty there, kind of some of the fun puzzles, the funny parts, hard parts, that kind of thing. Then after that, we play another round of the mouth and ear watering. What's the beer? What's the song? And of course, end things chatting a little bit about what we're going to be playing next. Sound good?
Everything except for ear watering.
It's that one song that I just jacked up the volume on. It was a little ear watering.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, it was rough. Okay, so let's jump right in. We got a lot to talk about. We don't want to talk for 3 hours. So let's talk about some of the beginnings of the first Monkey Island game, The Secret of Monkey Island. Where did it all start, Jason?
Well, it all started with Ron Gilbert hating fantasy games.
That's true.
In the 70s and 80s, fantasy was really what ruled adventure games. You know, you've got a million Lord of the Rings knockoffs. You've got Dungeons and Dragons. It's a really easy setup. You know, you don't have to describe anything if you do a fantasy setup because you got orcs and you know they're bad. You got elves, you know they're smart. And then you know that people are going to try and figure out stuff between, and the dwarfs will probably mine something.
You can probably use magic to win the day.
Exactly. So it fixes a lot of game stuff. It gets you to a different world, which is exciting for video gamers. But Ron didn't like it. The other option, of course, would be to go into the future, go sci-fi. And the problem with that is you got to spend so much time explaining to people what exactly is going on. You know, well, this is an android, and okay, he doesn't dream of electric sheep, but the sheep that he dreams up are pneumatic. And, you know, we don't need all of that background. But you got to provide that with a sci-fi book or a sci-fi game. So Ron hit on the idea.
This also kind of goes back to – sorry to interrupt. This kind of goes back to the not anti-Sierra, but the kind of rivalry where it seems like Sierra was making these really successful games like King's Quest, Police Quest, the Space – all the Quest games basically. But Lucasfilm Games at the time was looking to not only make fun games that sold a lot, but also just make inventive – make innovative games that were new to the scene, that weren't just kind of jumping on the backs of other themes that were already out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And if LucasArts was the anti-Sierra, then Monkey Island was the anti-King's Quest. And right. It really lines up that way nicely. And some of the interviews, you can tell they were even thinking about that along the way. Mm-hmm. So Ron knew he didn't want to do fantasy, he didn't want to do sci-fi. And he struck on the idea of the Pirates of the Caribbean ride and how much fun that is and how little explanation we need. We know what pirates are. Know what a pirate is? All right, you're good. We can play now.
Yeah.
We don't need any background.
Especially if you put, like, random skeletons over here or, like, people with big hats. Like, immediately if you have that the aesthetic of Pirates of the Caribbean, this is pre-movies, obviously, pre Pirates of the Caribbean movies. So people know right away. You've been to Disneyland, you know it's fun pirates we're talking about who like to play practical jokes and can be skeletons and that kind of thing, and immediately taken back to that fun world.
Yeah, totally. And as long as we're talking about Pirates of the Caribbean, we need to mention a popular internet fan theory. There is a fan theory that let me walk through this carefully. I'll go through the myth version first, and then we'll dispel it. The myth version is that the screenwriter of Pirates of the Caribbean, the movie, Ted Elliott, wrote a script for a Secret of Monkey Island movie. Mm-hmm. And then that got stuck in development hell, never got made. And then he rewrote it when the Pirates of the Caribbean movie came up. And even though he's never admitted this, that it's basically a Monkey Island script. And you can see all the connections. There's little things like both Jack Sparrow and Guybrush Threepwood use a coffin as a rowboat. You know, that's like a really small thing. The love interest in Pirates of the Caribbean is not the governor, but the governor's daughter. So, you know, there's and, you know, even the main pirate in the movie looks a lot like Guybrush. It all lines up really well.
Whoa, he's a blonde pirate, a young blonde pirate. That's totally right? True. Yeah.
The problem is that there's not unequivocal evidence that Ted Elliott did write that Monkey Island script.
Oh, man.
Instead, I found some sites saying absolutely Ted Elliott wrote this script, and some saying no, there's no way, no connection whatsoever. So for now, we'll have to label this theory as plausible, but unconfirmed, mm-hmm. certainly.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. So let's get into the truth behind Monkey Island. It was 1988. Ron Gilbert was working as, I believe, a designer at Lucasfilm Games. And he had this idea for a piratey game. He hated fantasy, right? So he wanted to do this funny, sardonic, pirate-themed adventure game, point-and-click adventure game. And apparently he had to wait 2 years. They were working on Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, the graphic adventure. And when they finished that in 89... they assigned Gilbert to go work on this project, which at the time was called Mutiny on Monkey Island. And he was looking around for other Lucasfilm gamer scumlets to help him work on it. And that's when he stumbled upon the great Tim Schafer and also great Dave Grossman, who did a lot of the programming and design on at least the first two Monkey Islands. I think more than that, but went on to do dozens of these great, great adventure games that we will be playing and have played. But yeah, I know Grossman and Schafer read an interview with them where they both talk about how they argue over who would work at Lucasfilm Games longer. Apparently, Grossman got there at the front door one day. The door was locked, so he did a lap around the building looking for a way to get in. And when he came back to the front of the building, Schafer was there. So Grossman always says that he beat him by a few minutes, and Schafer said he beat Grossman by a few minutes. But either way, they've both been scumlets for a very, very long time, and they kind of jumped on the pirate train to get to help out Gilbert in making The Secret of Monkey Island.
Yeah, and they both really cut their teeth on that.
Yeah.
And without Monkey Island, you don't have Day of the Tentacle. You don't have Sam and Max. You don't have Grim Fandango. You don't have so much of what came in adventure games throughout the 90s.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was interesting when they said, because those were the three people, they said there was no more than a half a dozen people completely working on the entire game. So those were the main three guys working on it. And it was, I heard another interview with Gilbert where he basically says that while they really liked writing together, they all worked on writing all of the dialogue for everything. Their writing styles were so different that they ended up just like chopping up the entire game, all of the dialogue, all of the scenes, and assigning Schafer, Grossman, and Gilbert to be different characters throughout the whole game. Which made the characters very diverse and just gave them all totally different personalities, which I thought was a great idea. Rather than like getting together and saying, this scene needs to go from here to here, they literally just picked a character and wrote those characters out and wrote it from there. I thought that was kind of cool. I never heard of that before.
No, that's a great way to do it. You could actually find some of Ron Gilbert's development documents online. You can find some of the initial development documents online and see how they put together some of the puzzles, things like that. When you look back actually at early versions of it, it's interesting. They had seen it definitely as an adventure game, but with some kind of arcade mini games in the middle. You were going to, you know, kind of bulk up your player and get ready to do certain things by raiding ships when you finally got your ship. Mm-hmm. The game would have been a little bit longer, and it would have been much, much more piratey. That's really what you see in the original documents, or much, you know, piracy in a more traditional sense. And what we ended up with instead is this kind of interesting parody of pirating, where, you know, the character spends the first third of the game trying to learn how to be a pirate. And it's not a tutorial. It's just jokes about things that pirates do. And the fact that, of course, by just doing these three things, that doesn't make him a pirate. It's kind of a silly thing that they grant and that they put out there. And then by the time he becomes a pirate, again, he does almost nothing. And then goes on a rescue mission that he finds out was unnecessary. So the whole thing is really kind of a joke about pirate games. And because of that, I think it's just so much stronger than the original idea of just making a really fun, interesting pirate game.
Yeah, definitely. I think we should probably talk a little bit about kind of the development and technical side, which is which I always think is fascinating with these games that it seems like games today can kind of get away with whatever they want. Their entire world. You talk about Star Wars Battlefront, which is just these colossal worlds, or Grand Theft Auto, which is the same kind of thing. It's just hyper realistic graphics, and the game engines are just massive, and the controls are spot on perfect. And you go back to these games, and so much of the look and so much of the puzzles and the plot was shaped by the technical limitations that they had to deal with the Scum engine, which this was, I think, the fourth or fifth Scum game ever. So it's pretty early on in that Scum world.
Yeah. And we actually dug up, speaking of Scum, the probably not the original, but one of the earlier tutorial manuals for Scum design. So this is... it was called Scum U, they called it. It was this kind of boot camp for learning how to use Scum to create video games. And it's they called all the little students Scumlets, which was fun as well. And so I've got this first page. It's a 200-page manual. And here on the first page, it starts with Scum stands for Script Creation Utility for Maniac Mansion. Continues a little bit about the history. Scum was originally designed for the Commodore 64 by Ron Gilbert. While we program on an IBM clone, Scum is not tied to any particular hardware, and Scum programmers will run with little change on other machines. And then it goes into all the different things you can do with it. And there is thanks given to Ron Gilbert, David Fox, Eric Wilmunder. Eric Wilmunder is actually who we got this from. He runs a site that houses a bunch of these old documents. And of course, thanks to the Scumlets. And Dave and Tim are in there in a list of a variety of others, nice. Which is just, it's neat to see the history there. It's cool to see this 200-page technical document that begins a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Ron Gilbert created the Scum system on a Commodore 64. It's got that sense of whimsy and humor that you know is going to carry over into the games. And it's also going to teach you how to program.
That's cool. Yeah, one of the things that I noticed about it was that they in an interview with Steve Purcell, there's a quote about how limited and frustrating the color palette was, because there was only 16 colors they could use. 16 colors. And now there's unlimited. I mean, the resolution was 320 by 200 pixels that they were working with. And I mean, it's just insane that later on, I think with one of the re-releases on the CD-ROM, they were able to get up to 256 colors, which was a huge difference. But apparently, that's one of the reasons that everything is blue. That's one of the reasons why.
Oh, interesting.
That's a 16th of the colors they had were blue.
That's funny.
And so, why Guybrush has black pants and a white shirt. It's not necessarily because it's piratey. It's just because they didn't have the technology to make him have different colored clothes.
But it's also part of what works about it. I mean, we both played the special edition, and you could skip back and forth between the new special edition and the old one when we played it. It was really fun, but I kind of like the original art better in some ways.
Yeah.
It's so simple. You're able to connect to those characters even more. I really enjoyed it. So, Ben, did you find out any interesting tidbits about the making of the game?
One of the coolest ones that I'd never even heard a rumor of was that when they were doing the insults, which there are, I don't know how many insults there are, but dozens of insults. And part of the game is and you're sword fighting. Hopefully you've played the game if you're listening to this. And if you haven't, stop, go play it right now and come back. Is you insult sword fight. And there's insults and then there's comebacks. And they're just really, really, really clever. But one of the people that helped them out, I don't know if you heard this in your research, but was Orson Scott Card, of the writer of Ender's Game and the Ender's Game trilogy or book series. That apparently came to Skywalker Ranch for an afternoon. And I don't know if it was for an afternoon or for a month or whatever, but came by and helped them write insults. And apparently Orson Scott Card's the bad insults, like I'm shaking, I'm shaking, and oh yeah,
yeah,
were written by Orson Scott Card's son or daughter at the time.
That's great.
Just gave it to his, he sent an insult to his kid, and the kid's just like, oh yeah. And he's like, oh, we'll use that as the wrong reply.
Man, Orson Scott Card, the guy who discovered Harrison Ford, right? I mean, had he made movies before Ender's Game 2 years ago that he'd done other stuff?
I think it's fair to say that he rediscovered him. I mean, okay, cool. I don't know how many Oscars Harrison won for that, but it was probably more than zero.
I think seven, I'm just going to assume.
And then we should also mention that in 1990, so the year this came out was when they Lucasfilm Games became LucasArts. So this was one of the last Lucasfilm games. And actually, LeChuck's Revenge, Monkey Island 2, I think is the name of it. What's that?
Yeah, Monkey Island 2, LeChuck's Revenge.
Yeah. That was the first game ever ever released under the name LucasArts. So, any other tidbits of knowledge before we get into the gameplay?
That's about all I got. Let's get into the gameplay.
I think a real quick kind of game setup. We do talk a long time with Corey about this, but it's a standard LucasArts kind of classic 2D third person point and click adventure game. You have a list of verbs on the bottom half of your screen in the original version, at least. In the new version, in the 2009 remastered version, there's just, you know, right click, or you can click on the keyboard, P for pick up and T for talk to someone, and then you click on them. But basically, yeah, the setup for the game is you're stuck on an island called Melee Island. You walk around to different scenes, talking to people, picking things up, and solving puzzles to kind of meet your objectives, which are pretty clear early on.
Yeah. You got a variety of characters. Your main hero is Guybrush Threepwood, which best name in the world. And don't worry, in our interview, we'll get into the history behind the name.
Oh, yeah.
Governor Elaine Marley, who is a really fascinating character, again, that we'll spend a little more time on elsewhere. The ghost pirate LeChuck is our villain, formerly just LeChuck. And he fell in love with Marley. She told him to drop dead, and then he did. A voodoo priestess who is unnamed, but quite powerful, a good deal smarter than Guybrush, I think it's safe to say. Stan, the used boat salesman, a good bit dimmer than Guybrush, I think it's safe to say.
Yeah.
Although he certainly speaks quite a bit. The mighty Carla, the swordmaster, who is initially a foe, a trial to surmount, and then becomes one of your closest allies in doing absolutely nothing.
Yep.
And of course, various other minor characters, a prisoner, the great Meat Hook, and of course, Herman Toothrot.
Where are your pants, Herman?
What pants?
All right. I think that's about it. We will start getting into the gameplay right now.
This is an interview with our special guest. We're going to ask him about the gameplay and we'll handle the rest. Yeah.
So we have a special guest with us today. It's Corrigan Vaughn. Corey, say hi.
Hi.
Hey.
Corey is an old friend of ours from back in the day and a fervent lover of all things Monkey Island.
This is true.
I guess.
That's very true.
We'll debate whether that's actually accurate.
We'll find out if she's a fervent lover of Monkey Island or not over the next 20 minutes or so.
So before we get into the gameplay issues, we'd love to talk about what it was like to play the game. But I heard a rumor that Corey has something to say to me first.
Oh, hello.
I do. It's totally unrelated to like the actual game you were talking about, but in your Zombies Ate My Neighbors,
yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
That last one? In that episode, Ben actually asserted that the song Metro was by Berlin.
Dang it. I knew it was going to happen.
You corrected him and you said you thought that it was Eurythmics. It is actually Berlin.
Yes!
Can I tell you something?
Dang it.
I once was like grad assistant for a conference, like California American Studies Association conference, and there's a professor at Cal State Fullerton who was in the band Berlin. And so he was going to check in. I know.
Wow.
Right? He was going to check in. I'm like, Corrigan, do not start singing Metro when this guy comes up. Like, just like hold it in. Don't do it. The guy comes up. He checks in. I'm like, nailed it. Didn't sing Metro. Like 20 minutes later, he happens to sit down next to me. And immediately I just start going. Like, there it is.
Oh, that's too good.
All right, so before we get into before we take our deep dive into the actual gameplay, we wanted to chat a little bit about your kind of observations and your impression of Monkey Island, either this game or all of the Monkey Islands as a whole. Kind of what, sure, you know, what you remember about those games before we asked you to play this game with us.
Well, I mean, Monkey Island basically was not a part of my, like, youth, per se. Mm-hmm. This was, I came about it through you, Ben, of course. Yeah, and it was sort of through your enthusiasm that I got really into it, I suppose, which is why now playing it, I'm like, why was I into this? Because this is like, it's so frustrating to me on every level, because I think it's everything that I'm bad at in life in this. It's like puzzles, patience, like, I don't know. It's not really in my wheelhouse of things, but I just remember like having... These were like sort of pre-social media days and stuff like that, where we would waste time on our phones or anything like that. And so, you know, Ben and I just sitting in that one room in your house, like with your drums and all that kind of stuff and your computer in there, and just spending like hours playing this game. And I realize how loosely I use the playing as well, because I think I just mostly watched and like Ben let me click things.
Yeah. Yep.
It was kind of like he solved the puzzle and I clicked. And that was it.
Is watching other people play video games still a thing?
It's a huge thing. That's like a bajillion dollar
YouTube
market.
I love it.
I mean, there's...
Well, yeah. I guess it is on social media. Yeah, on Twitch and all that. I was just thinking, like, we used to do that all the time, just get into somebody's room and watch them play a video game.
Yeah, I mean, that's still how I do most video games. As you guys both know, I come from a long line of gamers, but I'm not really one myself. My stepdad was a video game programmer for, you know, both like PC and Mac games initially, and then, you know, the PlayStation and what was that? What, Dreamcast and all that kind of stuff. And so my whole family plays them, but I don't really play a lot of games, and I'm bad at them. It's not really my strong suit. But I mean, when I was in college, I bought like the CD-ROM version of The Secret of Monkey Island. And I, you know, it was my TBT in college. And it came, I don't know if this was standard. Did you ever get like CD-ROMs of them, or did you have like a floppy or whatever when you played these?
Oh yeah.
Like, floppy.
We own them in every medium possible.
Possible medium.
Yeah, probably.
It came, and I don't know if this is standard, so you can tell me whether this is standard or not, but it actually came with, like, the entire cheat book in it. So, yeah.
What?
It had a whole book that told you how to solve every single puzzle in the whole thing.
So all of the H buttons just listed out, basically?
It was just like one. All of the hints? Like, literally, like, if you're stuck, just do this. So I don't know if it was, like, some bootleg thing.
Wow. I don't remember that at all. Yeah.
And so that was how I played it the last time I played the game, was basically like 10 minutes of sitting there struggling through something and being like, screw it. Look in the book. Yeah. Yeah. How about you guys? What's your memory of this game? I'm sure you've talked about it a bit in your intro.
Well, no, we save it for this. So, I think a lot of my memory of Monkey Island before we started the whole Men of Low Moral Fiber, I mean, the name of our podcast and website and everything is from this game. So we definitely hold this game in high esteem. We love Guybrush. But a lot of my memory is probably pretty similar to Corey, except instead of watching me play, it's watching Jason play, because this game came out when we were like five, I was five. And so Jason was just old enough to get the floppies or whatever and play this game. And back then games didn't really have an expiration date. Like, even though this game came out, like, people played it longer than 6 months until the next one came out, you know? So even when people were playing Curse of, people were still playing Secret of, but yeah, I just remember watching Jason play this game over and over and over. When he would leave, I would come in and not solve any puzzles, but just kind of walk around the island. And that's my main memory, is just walking around the island and like repeating funny phrases to the same characters over and over and over and never completing. I don't remember solving any of the puzzles at all.
I would have been so mad at you if you'd solved any puzzles.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
I was a terrible older brother in so many ways. I would be like, what? How'd you solve? No. Oh, stupid. I also wasn't very articulate.
Mom!
What about you, Jay?
I think I remember playing it first at the Carahers house. Ben, you vaguely remember them, right?
Yeah.
Not vaguely, but you remember the Carahers.
Yes, we hung out with them very often.
I think it was on an Amiga. You know, one of those like computers quite a computer.
Yeah.
And I was just blown away. I still remember vividly the opening scene where you're walking on that cliffside
lookout
or whatever. Yeah, the little cliffside lookout. And I just thought it was the coolest graphics ever. And, you know, characters talking to each other. It was amazing and brilliant. And, of course, now it's really, really dated. But at the time, like, totally blew me away.
Nice. There's something to be said, though, like, even though it is dated, I don't know, I guess because of the feeling that you got when you played it at that point, and like Ben said, that things didn't just wear out after 6 months like mm-hmm. they do now, that I don't play it and think, like, gosh, the graphics are awful or anything like that. Like, it's still, it's like, you know, it's cartoony. It works in its own way.
Ben sent me a video today that was making fun of Star Wars as part of it, and I couldn't get on board with the critique of it because I can't view Star Wars from any other way than it's the most amazing thing ever, and there's nothing wrong with it.
There's nothing wrong with it.
And Monkey Island's the same way for me. It was so formative. Like, I don't know if my sense of humor connected with it or if it created my sense of humor. They line up so perfectly that it was either the game meant for me or it's the game that created me.
Ooh. Interesting.
Wow.
That's a big responsibility, LucasArts.
Yeah, so. These games, as slow as they are and as easy as that is for Jason, because he doesn't have to click on things and go left and right really quickly like he did in Rebel Assault. How many times did you guys hit H for hints or look at your special booklet for hints or Google it or whatever? and what were some of the big ones that you were just like, there's no way I ever could have figured this out, or it would have taken me 12 hours to figure this out without looking up a hint?
Let me be honest with you. I was constantly Googling everything, basically. It was like, because...
Cool. All right. I appreciate that.
Here's the thing, is that there were things that I remembered, and I think some of that worked against me. So I was like, no, like, I know this is supposed to work. Why is it not working?
Yes.
And then it was like, well, you missed a step. You had to talk to this one person beforehand, or things like that, you know, like going and trying to, like, take care of, like, dogs in front of the mansion or whatever before I'd gone and done other things. I'm just like, no, this works. Or, you know, various things like that really stumped me. So I was constantly just like, what the hell did I do wrong here? So really, it's like I barely played the game, to be honest with you, because I was constantly just like, I don't know. I want to finish this someday. I have to write a dissertation, so maybe I should give it a little time and then give. So I just want to be honest straight out the gate.
No, I totally get that. I did that a few times too, and this has happened with a couple games where I remember playing them 20 years ago, but I don't remember how I did it. So, like, with the dogs, I'm like, oh, I give them meat. And so the first thing I did was I got the meat and I gave it to the dogs, and they ate it. I was like, well, maybe I've come back later. So I came back the next day, and, like, they're still, like, barking.
I had a moment of panic because I fed them the meat.
Yeah.
And then they ate the meat, and now I don't have the meat. Can I get the meat? Can I just, like, is this the end? Did I just fail
the game? Just lost Monkey Island.
So both of you just turned Monkey Island into a Tamagotchi pet.
He just
kept feeding the dogs.
Oh, he's sleeping. I'll come back later.
I'll come back. Gonna clean up the dog poop now.
Wow, that's a good throwback right there.
I came back at the end of the game, and the dogs were still sleeping. I didn't get it. And that actually reminds me of my favorite puzzle in the whole game, which was when you're stuck underwater.
Yes. Yes.
And
so
I was, apparently I didn't do this, but after 10 minutes you die. So I need to go look up that cutscene. And it's the only time in the game, I think it's the only time in all the Monkey Islands where Guybrush can die.
Yeah.
And all you do is you pick up the idol that you're anchored to and put it in your pocket, and then you climb out of the water, which I just thought was hilarious. I probably spent like 9.5 minutes clicking on random swords and things.
Oh, and you want them so bad.
So much.
So
I was just
bad.
Like, pee this, just like over and over and over and over. That sounds inappropriate, but I was trying to pick up everything. I peed everything. Finally peed on the idol.
Ben was playing a different game.
Got out of there. Yikes.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that got me, too, was, and this one, I thought that I was doing something wrong, but it turned out it was just my computer. So I told you guys that I was about to, like, throw things.
Yes.
Because
the Fettuccine Brothers.
Like, talk. Yeah, I couldn't talk to them. And so I was like, I must be doing something wrong. And I, like, went and I Googled everything. I was like, what is happening? Why can't I do this? And then my computer straight froze. And when I turned it back on again, it worked fine. And so it was like just one of those moments where I was like, I'm too stupid for this game. I'm done. I'm out. And then it turned out it was just my computer. That was all.
I just love the idea that you literally Googled everything. Like just phrase by phrase.
Everything. Maybe that's, and I remember playing these games, and especially Sam and Max, where you get to a point in the game that's probably like 5 or 6 hours in that you've talked to everyone, you've picked up everything, you've clicked, you've tried to pee on everything, you've tried to pick up everything and talk to everyone and combine things, and you just can't get any further. And the last time I played it, I was like 14 years old, but I remember thinking like, oh, this has got to be some sort of like glitch.
Yeah,
like
right.
This isn't my fault at all. Like this is the CD we got is broken.
Yeah.
Like that's obviously the only answer. And we never ended up beating the game. And this probably happened with a few of these games with me where I was just like, I got a broken version. Well, yep. It's not my fault. I tried everything for 5 hours. So next game. Yeah. It's a lot easier to watch Jason beat the games.
When was the first time you ever beat this game? Do you remember?
I remember the fireworks. I remember watching Jason beat this. But I don't know if I ever personally beat it.
Probably 1992 or so.
Okay, so you like you did the first time through. You had no throw your floppy, smash your computer moment.
Oh, I had a lot of those. I never actually smashed anything. But I was also playing it with other people. So we'd go to school and we would talk about the game.
Oh, that's fun.
And somebody would have gotten past a puzzle. And you'd say, oh, how do you do it? And we'd try and give each other hints without giving away too much. But, okay, we would show up to school and actually practice our insults with each other.
You're kidding me.
That's amazing.
Like, I'd walk up to Michael Conrad and I'd say, you fight like a dairy farmer. And he'd say, that's great because your mother's a cow or whatever.
I believe
it is.
It's how appropriate. Is that what it is? You fight like a cow or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive.
If you remember, Corey was sword fighting forever.
I was.
So she would know those.
I know that so well because I was sword fighting for my entire life, you guys. Oh, my God. You know, the other thing was talking to that friggin' salesman.
Yes.
This is where worst. I live now. This
did,
is all
did
I
Did you
do.
Figure out that you could press...
That was terrible.
Did you figure out you could press period to skip through the dialogues?
Does it sound like I figured that out?
It did not.
It didn't sound like that at all.
That's not what it sounded like.
No.
Yeah, no, he's intentionally annoyed, and I love that about him. And that he recurs throughout the Monkey Island series.
His arms
and is
the
making
whole time.
The arm waving gestures. Yep. This is such a good thing for an audio medium. Thank you, Ben.
Yep, no problem.
Yeah, when LeChuck finally like kicks him or whatever, I was like, oh, thank God. That's all I've wanted this entire game.
Oh, man.
It's just to kick Sal, Stan. Was that his
Stan.
Name?
And use vessels.
So. One thing I noticed just as you were talking about this is how restrained Monkey Island is in terms of the amount of things you can do at any given time. So it feels like a lot. But if you compare it to Sam and Max, for example, Sam and Max, any area you open is now open for the rest of the game. And it's almost entirely that way. You just keep adding more and more areas and sometimes need to go back to something you've already done. So imagine that if you, while you were on the ship, you could also go back to Monkey Island, and there might be some, or back to Melee Island. There's something on Melee Island you needed, or go forward to Monkey Island. There's something you needed there, and it just expands so much. But that was one of the things that's really frustrating to me about Sam and Max, if I remember correctly. But Monkey Island does such a great job with really restrained stuff. I think the pinnacle of it is what Ben was saying about when you're drowning. There's just not that much you can do.
Yeah. Right,
you're going to get out of it, and you're only going to die basically if you mean to. Because you're going to exhaust all the options.
I think especially as a young gamer, when I was just kind of figuring out video games and genres and stuff, this was the perfect kind of balance between linear gameplay and what's it called?
Open world.
Open world. Thank you. Where it tricks you into seeming that it's open world because you can go to all these different cities on Melee Island and stuff, but it's extremely linear. There's only one way to win this game. And with like two or three, you know, you can sink your ship or not. You can die or not when you drown. But for the most part, 99% of the game, you can only follow one path.
Right.
And so, I don't know, especially on the this is one of my diatribes. Part two, where you take place on the boat. I remember getting there, looking around and being like, okay, there's what, three rooms on this thing?
Yeah.
This will take me 5 minutes.
Yeah. I got this.
And it's this extremely linear thing. You can only do one thing. And it's pretty clear, you know, 15 minutes into it, you're like, oh, I need to make this potion. And then I need to get in the cannon. Like, you kind of know what you need to do, and it still it took me probably 2 hours on that stupid boat. And there's, like, three rooms. There's not much you can pick up.
I had to get a hint to open the cereal box. I don't know why that was so tough for me. But I spent, like, half an hour there with everything done except for whatever was inside the cereal box. I don't know, a skull? Something amazing?
A key to open up the chest.
Oh, my gosh.
The press skull. which looking back was super easy. Took me super so easy. Long. I was like, where am I going to get Murray the Skull? He's nowhere in here. I've opened every chest I can. frustrating.
I just realized the skull you pick up from the voodoo area, the cannibals have. Not voodoo, it's cannibals.
go ahead.
You don't use that for anything, do you?
The what?
The skull that you pick up from outside the monkey head. You don't use that for anything, do you?
It's a good question.
I kept expecting one of the monkey or one of the skulls to start talking, but I guess Murray isn't until the next one. But I think the answer is no. All right, sorry to interrupt, but right about here we got off track a little bit for about 15-20 minutes and didn't talk about gameplay, but actually talked about kind of some of the stereotyping, some of the gender issues going on in Monkey Island. Really good conversation, but totally had nothing to do with the gameplay. So we actually took that. We're going to publish that as a separate kind of a micro mini pod, separate episode. So look forward to that coming in a few weeks. But now we will get back to the gameplay of Monkey Island. Enjoy. That reminds me of, on a less deep social level, of the kind of you're talking about how all of the actions of the game are futile in the sense that Elaine had it herself. Yeah. She had it all handled. Yeah. And that one of the most simultaneously frustrating and, I guess, just funny parts of the game to me was every time you know, you got your three trials, you got your crew together, every time you did something bigger than just one puzzle, it ended up, again, just being futile. You know, your right. ship or LeChuck stole the governor and went away. Every yeah. time you, I guess you got your crew together and you went to go get her, they decided to not lift a finger.
Yeah.
And when you, and then when you finally get the, what's the voodoo root elixir, the root beer stuff yeah. from the cannibals,
yeah,
you go
it.
To get LeChuck and kill him. He leaves.
Yeah.
And you have to go chase him down. So nothing you did really yeah. mattered. And that's just kind of the whole point of, I think, maybe video games as a whole. I mean, they're trying to subvert a lot of video game stereotypes and yeah. social things in here. So none of that is by accident, obviously.
Right.
Yeah. I think they did a great job of that.
The whole game is very meta in making you think about yeah. it as a video game and say, hey, weren't you expecting this to happen? No, this is going to happen now.
Yeah, that's very true.
In a way that still worked as a video game.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't something that took you out of it and made you frustrated or was like, oh, why did I even do this? Like still funny, still played
well,
within
I
the rules
like
of
that,
video
but-
games.
That's me.
Besides Corey. yeah. But I mean, it's the perfect balance of frustration and reward. Like once you
right.
do finally figure that out, you realize that that half hour or so, whatever it was worth it because you were clicked on everything. And when it did make sense, it was so obvious, which is the yeah. perfect kind of puzzle for these games. And you're like, oh, obviously I needed to just pick up the idol and right. walk away.
Yeah.
Like, it's so simple once you figure it out, even though your mind's going everywhere else but that.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the balance of the game, too, is, like, sometimes something is just, like, incredibly complicated, and you're like, I never would have thought of that. And then other times
yeah.
it's like, oh, it is, like, just that simple. You know? So yeah. you're constantly, like, the second you think you're like, oh, I've got this, I'm going to put this together and this together and this together, it's something, like, just ridiculously easy to do, you know, like step on a plank and that bird's gonna fly away and the fish, you'll be able to get a fish. No. Oh. Okay. I was like trying to lure it, like figure out things I could
yeah.
get and, you know, get the bird out. I was like, no, that's not what you need to do. It's just as simple as walk out on there and you're gonna be able to get this thing. So, you know, it's frustrating, but the few times that I didn't Google something, I did feel a sense of accomplishment when I managed to
exactly.
to solve a puzzle. It's just, I'm just not good at this stuff. That's what it comes down to. That's what it comes down to.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll go for it, Dave.
I think you distilled Monkey Island down to its basic feeling, which is one of overthinking things and then realizing that the solution was so much easier than you were making.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know. I guess I remembered yep. things being more complicated when we played them before, but it probably also was because I wasn't the one in charge, really. You were just making me think I was.
Here, click on this,
yeah,
Cord. You're doing great.
Like, yeah, this is so fun, Ben. I'm so glad you introduced me to this.
yeah. No, yeah, I think the time that I took the longest on was when after the pirates are looting the mansion or the governor's mansion after LeChuck takes Governor Marley away. Wow. A lot of names. and you go up and you make your, did you do this? You went up to try to loot the mansion or go to the mansion
right.
and you have to make a reservation. And
I
can't remember the times, but it's like for 2 o'clock and you look at the clock tower and it's 10 o'clock.
It never
so
moves.
So I waited 4 hours.
It never moves.
I left
did
the game
you?
On unpause for
oh,
4 hours.
You're awesome.
Then I was like, okay, it's still 10 o'clock. Then I like went to every character. I was trying to figure out a way to like speed up time. I can't remember what it was, but there was something in the game that was like, someone said something mysterious like, oh, tomorrow we'll do this. And I was like, oh, if I can make that thing happen, everyone will think it's tomorrow and that will change the clock. Took me so long. I was like, I didn't even need to get into the mansion. There's nothing in the mansion. You don't need to get there.
Incredible.
But for some reason, I was like, I have to go there and loot with the other pirates and maybe then I'll be a pirate.
It's really...
I was going to ask if there's anything more in the gameplay. Otherwise, we'll start doing What's the Beer, What's the Song? Anything else, Jay?
I don't think so. We didn't do favorite moments. So I guess just to open it up to that, is there's anything from the game you wanted to throw in? Something that you just loved or hated?
Can I say just like a random line that made me laugh really hard for no reason? And it's not that funny. It was just that when he goes in and talks to the like voodoo lady, and she guesses, she's like, you know, your name is Guybrush, and she says, and then she says Threepwood, and he says something along the lines of like, okay, half the guys I know are named Guybrush. That killed me. I was like sitting here just like snorting, like, just like the idea, like, you know, like your first day of school and you go through the roll and it's like Christopher B and Christopher D and Alex A. And, you know, I just imagine it being like Guybrush G, Guybrush N, you know, like a classroom full of kids named Guybrush. People being like, nobody names their kids original names anymore. It's just Guybrush. Everybody's name is Guybrush. That's kind of my hope for the future, actually. It's the next Aiden.
That reminds me of
the pirate that makes fun of your name.
I was just going to say that. I think that's
Yes.
I pulled it up. One of my favorite lines is, "What's your name? It's Guybrush. What kind of name is that? Well, what's yours? Mancombe Seepgood."
Yeah. Mancombe Seepgood. I'm not the only one who finds these name jokes hilarious.
So good.
Oh, I can't wait till we do research and find out why his name was Guybrush Threepwood.
I know. I'm sad that you haven't already done that, because I was hoping you'd tell me, but I guess I could Google it, seeing as I was Googling everything else.
All right, everybody buckle in for this bit of news.
Okay.
The origin of the name Guybrush comes in part from Deluxe Paint, the tool used by the artist to create the character sprite. Since the character had no name at this point, the file was simply called Guy. When the file was saved, Steve Purcell, the artist responsible for the sprite, also creator of Sam and Max, added Brush to the file name, indicating that it was the Deluxe Paint Brush file for the Guy sprite.
So
the file name was then Guybrush.bbm, so the developers eventually just started referring to this unnamed guy as Guybrush. Guybrush's surname, Threepwood, was decided upon in a company contest and is derived from P.G. Wodehouse's family of characters, including Galahad Threepwood and Freddy Threepwood, with whom he shares similar characteristics.
Oh, da-na-na-na.
Okay. What's the beer, what's the song?
Let's do it.
This game's pretty fun. You with frustration. When I was all done, I just had two questions. What's the beer? What's the song? I can't always tell. I just wanna know. What game is West
D12?
All right. All right. So we have invited Corey along with us to do a little What's the Beer, What's the Song. Hopefully she's prepped for this, just like Jason and I have. But yeah, this is the part of the show where we pick one beer and one song that best represents the secret of Monkey Island and kind of what that means to us, what we see the game as, what we see these beers and songs as. Jason, you want to start it off?
I always go first.
I'll start it off.
Thank you.
All right. So first we're going to start with the beers. And the beer for Monkey Island for me is kind of the three criteria were super fun, very rewarding, lots of replay value. I left frustration out of there, which maybe I should have. But I guess if you drink enough of this, that would be negative. But that is Pliny the Elder by Russian River Brewing Company in Santa Rosa, California. It's the first double IPA ever. And just kind of like Monkey Island, it's the first in a long series of fun things. And it's still, even though it was the first, still one of the best.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Who wants to go next?
All right. I'll go. But keep in mind, so I was told it didn't have to be a beer because I don't really drink beer. As you can tell, seeing as I'm drinking Sam Adams, it's not real beer.
Right.
So I went with a Dark and Stormy. Are you guys familiar with a Dark and Stormy?
Love them. Nice. Make them all the time.
Delicious.
Dark and Stormy. Ginger beer, dark rum, all that action.
Oh, yeah.
Because both it is thematically appropriate with the rum and the sort of the pirate vibe and all that sort of stuff. But also because it was my temperament while trying to play this game. So Dark and Stormy.
Dark and Stormy.
Do you have a go-to spiced rum that you use?
No, you know, I don't actually.
Okay.
Because usually when I go to a bar and order it, they have like one.
Right.
So
true.
I don't have one.
All right.
So my beer, I decided to choose something that I loved from the first moment I tried it. And yet once I returned to it, I loved it more. Mm. You know, it just keeps growing on me every time. Something complex and made in complex ways, unique ways. The beer is Orval, which if you haven't had, is a phenomenal beer.
Oh, so absolutely close to picking Orval.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
One of my all-time favorites. It's a Trappist ale. There's only seven Trappist breweries in the world that are officially licensed to be called Trappist breweries. It has to be brewed by monks. It has, like, all these rules. A certain amount of the proceeds have to go to charity, yada, yada. It is different from all the others in that it only has one. Everybody else usually has, like, a single, a double, a triple. Theirs is the double. And not only is it different in that way, it's also dry hopped, which is when you add hops during fermentation so that you get a big hop flavor, whereas most of the Trappist ales try to play down the hop flavor. And third, it's the only Trappist ale that includes Brettanomyces, which is a completely different yeast that's not even related to Saccharomyces. It's funky and weird.
Pretty sure you're making up all of these words.
I know. It blew my mind. And the more I study it, the more I love it. And then it's got a fish with a ring in its mouth as its logo. It's really cool. I don't know. That feels kind of piratey. Anyway.
All right. So for my song, I went old school 90s, just like this game is. Nice. An ongoing joke of all the Monkey Island games is that Guybrush is kind of a joke. He's a loser who wants to be a pirate. No one gives him respect. But in the end of the game, he ends up saving the day, or at least aiding somewhat in not preventing the saving of the day. This game is full of seemingly endless one-liners and detailed puzzles and lyrics. Guybrush is always optimistic, even though times get hard. He's a driver. He's a winner.
Things are gonna change. I can feel it.
So I picked this song and I was looking through the lyrics. And I realized the first line is, "In the time of chimpanzees, there was a
monkey."
So I was like, "Okay, this is just perfect."
Perfect.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I like that you went with, like, you know, a leitmotif for a character, because that was the way that I went with mine as well. Nice. So
I like that you said leitmotif.
You're going to accept it? You're going to...
Oh, yeah. No, you just accept it. I loved it. It's great.
I also did the same, but I felt that I would do one for someone a little more under the radar. So I was thinking about good old LeChuck and his crew of dead mateys and so forth, and the way in which he thought that he could capture Elaine's love through kidnapping, which is never an ideal way to do it. So, you know, I thought about a guy who just wants love and maybe shows it the wrong way. Jason, do you have a guess on this one?
I've got no idea.
Oh, okay.
I'm lost at sea.
Sting.
I considered Sting. That was
nice.
My first instinct.
Okay.
I considered Sting. I'll be watching you. But instead, I went with You'll Be Back from Hamilton, as performed by Jonathan Groff.
I will send a fully armed battalion to remind you of my love. Da 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 da.
A little song about punishing your love, the colonies.
That's good.
For leaving in order to win them back. So that's my LeChuck.
Nice. So I'm going to press play on this song as I start to talk about it, because it takes a while to warm up. Yeah, you'll hear it.
Okay.
Don't worry. You'll know. I've got this covered.
Okay.
So I chose a song that was also it was about a tightly knit virtuosic piece, and I could consider Monkey Island really tightly knit, and they've kind of arrived. I think LucasArts is now showing off. And one of the things they do is really show their seams, which is something that this song does.
Love won't get you high as this. Drugs won't get you high as this. Fame won't get you high as this. Chains won't get you high as this. Juice won't get you high as this. Crew won't get you high as this.
Cool. Enjoy that. There were some specific lyrics in there and some fantastic insults matched up nicely with Monkey Island. But also, it is 7.5 minutes long. So it's Monkey Island's a really long game. Took a while to play it. Nothing more clever than that. Oh, and I like the song.
You're right. You win.
Yeah.
Nice. That's good.
Try to be more clever than me right now, guys.
Right? It's long. Monkey Island's long. Boom. Done.
All right. Well,
mic drop.
Thank you so much for joining us, mm-hmm. Corgan Vaughn. Do you want to plug some places where people can find you and find some of your great info?
Yeah, you can find my podcast, Electric Fan Cave, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on all the things where podcasts are, or you can go to electricfeast.com, find them on there, and the blog with all the stuff that we put up about our podcast and the links that we talk about in every episode, and lots of random writing from me. You can find me on the Twitter, Nerds Rocket, like a rocket ship, and Instagram, the Corrigan, Snapchat, Nerds Rocket. Nerds Rocket on pretty much everything. You can find me. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about a sentence about Electric Fan Cave, about what the podcast is?
Sure. Electric Fan Cave is our pop culture podcast, me and my co-host Kristen Latterell, where we often do sort of a trivia format. We try to quiz each other about the week's events, what's happened in pop culture, and occasionally we have cool semi-famous guests on it who chat with us as well, and we do lots of geek things, go to cons, whatnot, and generally give you something to talk about around the water cooler at work.
Well, thank you, Corrigan Vaughn. You can definitely check out her podcast. It is really fun. Every Tuesday night, you can watch her live record her podcast. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. We'll see you later. All right. Thanks again to Corey for joining us. And right now we're going to talk about what game we're going to be playing next month.
Ooh, what's next? I'm excited. Tell us, Ben.
I will tell you. It's actually, we haven't gotten too far away from Star Wars. We did Rebel Assault over on May 4th behind me. I'm pointing behind me for some reason. But yeah, 2 months later, we're going to be jumping back into the Star Wars world. There are a lot of Star Wars LucasArts games, and we're going to be doing one of the big ones, which is Star Wars Dark Forces.
Ah, this was one of my favorites. Again, it came out right in that sweet spot of 1995, so I was already into LucasArts games, and I remember counting down the days until Dark Forces came out and buying it the day it was released. I was so excited.
Yeah, I remember the cover of this game just sitting next to our computer for years and years and years.
Oh, it did not disappoint. I played this game a lot.
Interesting. This is one of those games that kind of like a lot of LucasArts games that embrace the pixels. It didn't shy away from it. You shoot things and you see four squares of white and yellow and red or whatever. And you see, you're like, oh, that exploded. It's a square explosion.
Yep.
But you embraced it and it didn't detract from the game at all. So this is a fun one. Hopefully you can download this. I know on GOG.com, there's probably a few other places. If you just search for this game, it's probably less than $10. You might be able to get Dark Forces 1 and 2. We'll be playing the second one eventually as well. But this time we're just going to be playing the first game.
Yeah. I think it's available on PlayStation Network as well, so you can look into that.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
But we'll post about it and tell you where to get it. Basically, first-person shooter looks a lot like Doom because Doom came out. It was pretty popular. It kind of blew everyone away. And hobbyist computer programmers actually gone out and created mods of Doom where you could play on the Death Star and things like
that. That's awesome.
And people at LucasArts went, oh, that's a really good idea.
We should do that and make money.
That does sound like the coolest thing ever. Let's make that happen. And they actually upped the ante and made a better game engine or an improved game engine to run it. So there were some technical advances there. It wasn't just a quick ripoff of Doom. But man, it is a cool, cool game, and I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, it's one of the first games when we talked about starting Men of Low Moral Fiber that we downloaded a couple of demos of just to kind of see if these games were any fun still, if we'd even want to do this kind of thing. And immediately we're like, yep, this game's awesome. Let's play it again and talk about it.
Yep.
So right, I think that's it. Yeah, I think that that's about it that we have for today on Monkey Island. Hopefully you can play Dark Forces in the next few weeks. If you have any questions about Monkey Island, Dark Forces, anything LucasArts at all, feel free to find us at menoflowmoralfiber.com. You can email us at molmfpod@gmail.com. You can find all our other links on our website. Thanks again for joining us. I have been Ben.
I will be Jason.
And finally, I'm a mighty pirate.
And look behind you, a three-headed monkey.
See you guys.